Dr. Charlie, I suppose, first of all, maybe you could explain to us what is concussion?
Well, I'm very conscious, Tom, that this is a broadcast over the radio, and I don't want to get too technical about it. But for all those out there listening tonight, the first thing I would want to say is that I don't want to cause any undue concern in the county, and particularly for mums and dads whose young fellas and young girls are going out playing soccer or Gaelic or rugby tonight or this weekend. That all we're trying to do here is not to wrap them up in cotton wool, Tom. All we're trying to do is to make sure they go out, play the game, and are safe. And by what I mean by that is that those who are involved on the sideline, if they're parents or if they're the referee or the coaches, that they just keep a little bit of an observation and just be a bit more informed of what might go wrong. So to explain really a little bit of what concussion is, I'm going to take you back to what a trauma surgeon in Boston once said about the brain, because it all starts with the brain. And he says, the brain is like the best supercomputer ever built, but it's built out of jelly. So that's what you're dealing with. You're dealing with a structure that actually controls everything that no computer, man-made, can meet in terms of capability, and is made of nothing stronger than a lump of jelly. And we have to protect that. And the body has devised a mechanism of protecting that itself. So the brain kind of floats in a small little bit of fluid, and then it's protected on the outside by a skull, a hard bony cage. Like it's like a natural helmet. Now, mild trauma, like, you know, toddlers that fall and they hit their head off the floor or off a staircase and that, you know, no major trauma is done. The brain can absorb that, and the fluid around that will protect it, and so will the helmet. If you have what they call an acceleration-deceleration, where you're going for a high ball, say in a Gaelic football, and you land awkwardly and the back of your head bangs off the ground, then you can automatically see that there's a massive deceleration there. So you're going from falling backwards to stopping because you're hitting your head off the wall, off the ground. And what happens there then is that the brain bounces inside in the skull. And you can get a little bit of contusions, a little bit of bruising on it. But we also know that there's actually a biomechanical effect. And to not to get too technical, the brain goes into nearly a hyper-excitable state in that you have all these what they call neurotransmitter release. So neurotransmitters are what are released at the end of nerves and that to orchestrate everything, right? You get an influx of those released. You get a change in the dynamic of the composition of the inside and the outside of cells, all right, of the cells of the brain. And you get actually a decreased blood flow to the brain itself because... And you also get an increased uptake in the energy requirements of the cells of the brain. So without getting too technical, there's a massive effect at cellular level on the brain that you will never see, that no scan will ever pick up, but that this is occurring once you have significant injury to the brain. And the most common type and the most common misconception about concussion, Tom, is that you need to be knocked out. You need to get a blow to the head, you need to get a punch to the jaw and fall down. You don't need to get that. You don't need to be knocked out. You don't need to lose consciousness. You don't need to get a bang to the head at all. You have to be aware that a significant force hit to the front of the chest wall that will give what they call transmitted force up to the brain.
So you don't even need to get a bang on the head?
You don't need to get a bang on the head. And most importantly, you don't need to be knocked out. So people saying, oh, but he was knocked out, ref. He's all right to go. That's not true. And that's the kind of... I want to try and take people away from that. And I said, no scan... To prove that point, no scan will pick up these subtle cellular changes, but they are dramatic. And if they're not, and if the symptoms that the person then comes forward with aren't picked up on, then these changes will go on, and actually you can put someone in danger if you don't look after these subtle changes. So that in essence is what concussion is. It's called mild traumatic injury, mild traumatic brain injury. The good news for everyone listening is that, you know, they usually respond in about a 7 to 10 day window. And with no long-term repercussions. But you have to make sure that you actually try and pick it up, and if you are concerned about it, that you act on it. I give a talk. I'm fortunate that I have access to, say, the Donegal Footballers, and when we had the first meeting this year, Tom, I asked Jim if I could have 15-20 minutes to talk to players about concussion. And I was talking to them in the capacity that I was bringing them to the grassroots level. I wasn't talking to them as inter-county footballers. I was talking to the fact that when they go back to their clubs, be it Glenswilly, Glentys, St. Michael's, Gweedore, that they would be the eyes and ears for their club. because that's the most important thing. Mm. Their safety is very much from a head injury, we hope will be monitored by myself and Kevin Moran. Mm. So that shouldn't be an issue for them. But I can't. We won't be there when there's a junior C team taking play, you know, game going on somewhere in some remote field on a Saturday evening with no medic available. Yeah. And it's just trying to raise awareness of what it is and the science to look out for. That's the thing, you know. Yeah.
And as you say, you're working with the Donegal team along with Kevin Moran. Obviously, you're a professional. You know the symptoms. You know the signs. You know what are the symptoms for the ordinary man, the ordinary club that, you know, as you say, the junior C, even the senior team in the league, the junior team, whatever, don't have a medical doctor or medical profession with them.
Well, I suppose the most important thing really is, if you can obviously see what happened or get someone to tell you, but if someone brings you onto the field, I give you a great example, Tom, and sometimes an example is better than actually going through a list of symptoms, signs and symptoms. Just the final this year, just semi-final last year in Clonus, ourselves and Down, and Ryan Bradley went down before half-time with an innocuous challenge. He went for a high ball and the timing, there was no malice in the challenge from the opposite player, but he landed on his back. And he hit his head off the so he had what they call a real deceleration injury to the brain. And for those of you who may remember it, he was lying just prostrate in the middle of the park. And I won't lie, that scared me. I was in duty that day and running out to him. I didn't know what to expect. So I just taken Ryan in after we showed him, after we assessed him on the field, and we'd taken Ryan in. We're in at half time, and Frank McGlynn, the Glenfinnan man, comes up and he goes, I don't remember the last 15, 20 minutes of the game. Now that's a frightening thing to hear, okay, because all of a sudden, you know, the whole dynamic changes here, you know, and you have to realise that there's a reason why this player is coming up to you. He doesn't remember, getting a mild kind of bang to the head in the after about 10 minutes of the game, but nothing too significant after that. But what happened was the actual injury he got was more significant than he thought. And for the last 20 minutes of the game, he says he didn't really remember what happened in that first half. And that was the first inclination we had of it. So then, as you can imagine, I have to go and tell Jim that we've to take a second man off for a concussion. So loss of memory would be one where they can't remember where they are, they can't remember what they were doing. But the most obvious one would be a headache. You know, and four in five people who have a concussion would have some degree of a headache associated with it. Most of them would be dizzy, and they describe being in a daze or being foggy. Visual disturbances where they see parameters. And actually, if you're talking to Ryan, gave a classic example. For 2 days after that loss, semi-final, Ryan was around the house. He was sleeping most of the time. He says he was just so tired and fatigued. And when after I'd assessed him at halftime, he says he could just see kind of little floaters all the time. And it's just the vision wasn't 100% correct, you know. The colours sometimes change, so they don't have the full direction of the colour. They can't determine definite colours, you know. What's very important is of what teammates say about a player, and that goes back to the young man in Ulster rugby last year, the 14-year-old boy Benjamin Robinson, sorry, who I heard his dad talk about him on one of the morning TV shows, and it was quite dramatic, really. It was quite tragic, really. But this young boy's teammates were kind of thought it was funny that Benjamin didn't know where he was and didn't know what the score in the game was and really didn't know what way they're supposed to be playing and all that. And the fact of the matter was, how could he? He had a horrific brain injury that wasn't picked up on in time, you know. And these injuries, so the main thing is just symptoms. So just to reflect on that, Tom. So headache, dizziness, a little bit of a light disturbance, dazed, kind of foggy, not be able to see things correctly. Sometimes you get mild nausea with it. But they'd be the key ones to look out for. In the presence of a trauma or a significant impact, which doesn't have to be associated with a direct blow to the head, and usually where there's some sort of loss of memory, where they don't know exactly what happened at that time. They'd be things to look out for in any field.
So, and once you become aware of that as a mentor, or obviously as a team doctor, or what do you do?
No, it's very. There's a great. There's an old adage that you've only got someone has a mild concussion. He's all right, or he's only a mild concussion. I want to get out the point that there's no such thing as a mild concussion. If you look up concussion, they'll give you different categories and different grades and different staging, but there's no such thing. If you're concussed, if you think someone is concussed, they're concussed, and that's the end of it. And the decision should be taken at that time that that player is taken off the field of play. And that's to really be the take-home. As I said, our role here and the role of anyone involved with team sports at any level is to protect and serve. And I use that from the NYPD and the LAPD, and I think it's a great phrase. And if it's the two, if it's just a phrase that sticks in someone's head, your role and my role with the boys tug out in Leash or against Galway, I have to protect them. And who am I, and the people I have to protect them from are themselves. And this is very, very apparent. There's a recent studies, a lot of the studies were done in American football, and there's a recent study, it's come to Super Bowl, you know, Sunday come up in the States, and just today there was a survey published of 320 professional NFL players, and 85% of them said they'd play in the Super Bowl even if they were concussed. And when one of the all-stars was asked the same question, he was surprised that 100% of them didn't say they were concussed. So I'm protecting them against themselves primarily because they don't have the ability to protect themselves. And that's apparent even from the Ireland final last year. Rory O'Carroll got a...
was the Dublin player.
Yeah, the fullback. He was involved in a collision with, I think it was Vaughan, I think, from the Mayo centre-back. And it wasn't a blow to the head because you can see it on video. It was actually kind of more of a frontal. He caught him in the front of his chest. And Rory O'Carroll was about 15 minutes for the last few minutes of the game was concussed. And there's a big thing made of it because Rory was actually an ambassador for Traumatic Brain Ireland at the time.
There was a situation there, I think, that used up all their subs as well, wasn't it?
Well, I think the sideline hadn't been aware of it.
Yeah.
And I know that the medics weren't aware of that decision. They weren't aware, the double medics weren't aware that Rory wasn't concussed. And his fullbacks were covering for him. And they were aware and they covered for him. A player saying that, you know, covering up for other injuries, that's very, very important. But look, so we have to protect them from themselves. Most high school kids in the States, a lot of these studies around the kids, most of them would say that they'd risk permanent brain damage for a chance to play in the big league, you know. So you have to protect them from themselves primarily, even if they do get an injury, because they won't want to come off. They'll feel they're letting themselves down, they feel they're letting their team down, and they feel there's something to contribute. And the biggest example of that was about 12 months ago, in the Six Nations, when Ireland were playing France, Brian O'Driscoll was togged, and he was horrifically concussed. You know, and there was people in the audience that day from the World Wrestling, you know, the WWE, and from the NFL in Croke Park that day, and they couldn't believe that they saw this man walking back out in the field, and thought it was absolutely incredible. But even more so was the fact that Brian's dad is a GP. In Dublin, and I'm just going to quote something here about concussion, and this will probably bring it home. He was asked about if he's worried about Brian down the road, you know, in terms of the head injuries he's had, and this is exactly what he said. He says, "Am I worried about Brian and how he'll be in 20 years? Absolutely," Frank O'Driscoll said. "You only have to go back to boxing and the dementia that has been caused there. Look at poor Muhammad Ali with his Parkinson's. Can you imagine the damage that has been caused to his brain every time he received a punch? The more I read about it, the more logical I find that this is occurring in rugby. The chemical changes that occur after a bang to the head are absolutely frightening." Then he said, "It's horrible to watch your son be concussed. The time against France when he talked his way back onto the pitch, that was outrageous. It was nonsense." You know, that's a dad speaking about his son.
But the dad is also a professional. He's a GP.
He's a doctor. And even if he weren't a doctor, you know, to see your son being carried off, not knowing where he was, knowing that he was incredibly badly injured, and then to see him struggle back out onto the field and to be allowed back onto the field, you know, I can tell you, you know, it's just, you know, you have to just always, you'd always have a vision, the vision of the young, that 14-year-old boy in Ulster rugby. That's what you're trying
really
to prevent.
The key is, if you have any suspicion at all, the player has to come off.
And that's the golden rule. Now, there are different templates you can use after that, kind of surveys and assessment tools they have, this SCAT tool and all that. But they're primarily, if you're in doubt, sit them down and take them off the field of play. No one will ever hold it against you. If you overprotect, it will be most certainly held against you if you underprotect. And at the end of the day, your role is to protect them, and you're protecting them really and primarily from themselves, because they don't have the capacity when they're injured to make that decision themselves. Well, and they're dependent on you.
Yeah, obviously, Phil, we just use Frank McGlenn for an example. He had the street smarts to let you know, but, you know, he wasn't in a position to make his own mind, you know.
But don't forget, Frank is in a, and this part, Frank was in 19, 20, 21. Frank is married with two children. Yeah. So, you know, there's probably that in his mind too, you know. If Frank was, you know, a 23-year-old young fella, you know, with no direct dependence on him, would he have sat down and said, I'll just battle through this?
Yeah, like, fearless, not, kind of. Yeah,
yeah, because, well, you know, but when you have dependence, obviously, you know, these things become more apparent, and I'm hoping. But look, the goal here, Tom, really, is just to, as I said, I don't want to cause any undue alarm. I don't want kids wrapped up in cotton wool or kids taking off teams or I want to, you know, you have to encourage all that. But
before we talk about, you know, what do you do when you discover that a guy has it as well as taking him off the field, just to recap again, it's fair to say managers, mentors, coaches have to watch out for, as I say, it doesn't have to be a bang to the head, it can be a fall, something that can be, as you say, something that can happen, you know, that is a shock to the system, in other words, you know, a bang to the head. There's a responsibility on other players as well, officials.
Totally. Like I said, the only person who really can't be of any help to themselves is the player.
Mm.
So they're totally dependent on the periphery, right? And that starts with, you know, his teammates adjacent to him, and they have to be, they should raise awareness and say, look, you know, whoever John Joe is, not, he's stumbling here, he doesn't know where he is, he can't mark his man, he doesn't know who he's marking, doesn't know what half it is, doesn't know which way he's supposed to be playing. That should be them, even make the ref aware of that, but definitely make the coaching staff on the sideline know, and they should, even if they don't have a medic or they don't have a physio, if they know now that if that sort of a history has been given and the player is saying that he's a headache, he's a bit dazed, he's foggy, the lights are coming down, he just can't see things, Lord bless us, never let that player back on until he's taken off.
Sometimes when we observe from the sideline, we see doctors or we see mentors maybe chatting to a player, maybe waving fingers or something, doing tests. Is that necessary?
For sure. I think, you know, it's very difficult, Tom, and but I've been out assessing players with so-called head injuries, and I've been told by refs to hurry up.
Yeah.
And you're trying to make a clinical decision here, you know. You're nearly put under the cosh to make a very difficult clinical decision in a very, very short period of time. We do try and assess, and, you know, it's very easy to assess where someone is. You know, some of the very, very basic questions based on what's called this, one of these tools. And the visual, you know, if they can follow your finger, they can count fingers, then, you know, you're excluding that there's a visual disturbance there, you know. But you do need time, and you need to get them composed and relaxed. But obviously, if there's any concern at all, you know, we make arrangements to take.
There's no one test you can do to prove without doubt.
And it's very, very important. If I took all the players in, like if I could just name them, I'd have had Anton McFadden and Michael Murphy in from a club only 21 game. Martin McHugh, Frank McGlynn twice, Ryan Bradley, Martin O'Reilly most recently, you know. Some of them would have had scans because of there was a collision involved, but not one of them would have shown any abnormality. And they're all in hospital for a night, and they're all, you know, by definition, significant. Some of them quite dramatically concussed. But no test will definitely diagnose it. But you have to be alert to it. And you're looking for signs and symptoms, and you correlate that then with the history of the injury itself. And you have to have a certain amount of understanding of what's going on, and you have to act. And to act is to take that player out of potential harm. And the potential harm here really is what they call the second impact syndrome, where you get a second concussion in a very, very short period of time on top of the previous concussion. And the problem at that time is that they're invariably always fatal. So that player doesn't come off the field. And that's the black and white of it. I've been on a field where a player didn't come off because of a heart problem many years ago. And it's not something I ever want to see again. You know, it was a Sunday morning down at Glengevlin where a half forward for the opposition team just collapsed. And it was awful to see a young fella in his shorts and his socks and his jersey not make it off the field. And I don't want that to be... I don't want ever to hear about that happening as a result.
You're talking about him dying.
Of course, and I never want to see that as a result of a head injury on any field.
Without wanting to be alarmist, if somebody gets concussion and is allowed back on, that's a possibility.
For sure. You're talking second impact syndrome. And like I said, our role and the role of the mentors, the coaches, the players, the teammates, the referee, is to protect and serve. Mm-hmm. You can't prevent injury. No one, God Almighty, you can't go out there and prevent injury. One of the leading causes of deaths in young people is injury, mm-hmm. falls, unintentional falls, etc. Mm-hmm. You can't prevent them things. But God Almighty, Tom, on the playing field, your role is to protect them mm-hmm. after they've had an injury and make sure that nothing happens mm-hmm. to them and that you don't make a bad situation worse. Mm-hmm. And all these head injuries will clear up if you have a concussion, Tom, if it's treated appropriately. It's managed.
Yeah, and the important thing is that it is treated. Like, you know, when the guy gets a knock on a club game in Ardra or Glenties or Guidor or Mallon or Buncrana, is it important that he's treated? He's not sent home, you know, or told to take a drink?
It's very important, Tom. And I'm very much aware that not every player who's going to have a head injury will be deemed necessary to come over to the hospital. The ones I had, Martin O'Reilly, just to say, you know, in the throne match, you know, Martin O'Reilly was on his hands and knees. There was three men around him. Martin O'Reilly came up with a 5-centimetre gash in his head and didn't know where he was. Mm. You know, he didn't get that cut off the blade of grass in the field, you know, so there was a definite forceful impact here, which required, you know, multiple sutures. Mm. And that's why he was admitted. If Martin O'Reilly had fallen outside of a nightclub, he'd be kept in the hospital for the same reason, loss of consciousness with a head injury and a cut and a laceration.
And in terms of we know there's quite a debate going on. You mentioned Brian O'Driscoll earlier. There's quite a debate going on in rugby at the moment in terms of, you know, and there's quite a lot of disquiet. Their policy generally, I think, internationally, rugby, you know, their policy towards concussion. Does the GAA itself have a policy, or what's their attitude towards it?
For sure, like for all those, I'm surprised not a lot of the players of girls and boys of all age groups and coaching staff aren't aware of what's available on the GAA website to begin with. And there's actually a concussion statement released, and it's this one now, it's from 2013 2016, and it's quite it's about 5 or 6 pages long. Every club should have it printed out, and those involved should read it and know exactly, and it goes through it, you know.
That's on www.gaa.ie,
you know, and you start with that. There's also information there on a vast array of stuff, like hydration, obviously important in terms of preventing head injury. You know, you don't want to go out too dry, dehydrated in that. You can be a little bit behind the game, you know, if you're not hydrated enough. If you're carrying injury, obviously, you're slow to react. So you put yourself, you're not unable to get yourself out of a position or out of a challenge quick enough. So all these things interact. So it's an incredible resource there to begin with. So there is a concussion statement by the GAA available on the website. And if you don't have in the clubhouse, someone should have it and print it and disperse it to the coaching staff.
Right. We discover that Charles McManus has concussion. How long does he stay off the game?
This is a very good question, Tom. Okay, and I'll give you what the protocol is for us in the Donegal setup. So if you're concussed today, you're out for a week, 7 days, right? And at that stage, then you're reintroduced back, and you're introduced back at a 24-hour window. So you come back then, and you do a light session, right? And then you have to. And if you've any symptoms in terms of a headache, if any of your blurred vision, etc., returns, then you're taken off again. If you can get through that, then you up the ante every 24-48 hours until there's about a 6-stage rehab process back, all right? And it's on that handout, and that'll get you back. That's a great return to contact, okay? So you don't go back just back into the challenge game or back into the
Take a week off and just go ahead for leather again.
No, you don't go back into the A versus B game on night one. This has to be gradual. You have to make sure of that, and you have to be very honest. And the one thing I've always said to the players from day one, going back 3 or 4 years, whatever it is, that we're dependent on their honesty, and we're very lucky that they're a very honest bunch. And if they think there's something, or if they pull something, or they find something twinge, they let us know straight away. If the honesty on someone coming back from a concussion is as important. You're dependent on them to say, no, I feel nothing. And then you up the ante. The majority, 7 to 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
And you're back. And then you're back to where you were before that.
Yeah.
You know, for just for...
And would you have fear of people who would maybe suffer repeated
over a period?
Well, it's known that if you have one concussion, unfortunately, you had increased a 4 to 5 fold increase in having a repeat concussion, you know, and if you have multiple, then for sure you have, there's an increased risk of having multiple concussions. So that's why it's very, very important. And you'd wonder if a lot of those were done before people were put to an integrated stepwise return to play. But as I said, everything has to be done in a stepwise manner. You can't just come back from day one a week later and go into an A versus B game. That's not the way it works, and that's not the way, and that's not doing you any justice.
And could there be a situation where if somebody had a fairly repeated or quite a lot on their career that you might say, look at it, like the Brian O'Driscoll situation?
Well, I don't want to comment on anyone else's. First of all, I won't comment on anyone else's code of play because it's totally out of my remit. But I think all I'd say is that there's no role for putting anyone's life at jeopardy, amateur or professional, in any sport. At the end of the day, the whole thing about sports, you go out to enjoy it, to give it your best, and you should be served by those who are there to try and look after you and make sure you can give of your best. There should be no role for anything beyond that, and most certainly nothing below that. And that's the level that we would expect anyone, whether it be under 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, minor, that when they're put out on the field, that they're put out to give of their best, and that those who are supposed to be looking after them will look after them to their best and make sure that they're safe. And that all you want is to get the 14, 15 guys back in and girls back in after a training session, after a game, and have them back out the following Sunday. But concussions do happen. The guys are getting bigger. They're getting stronger. The games are played at an incredibly more intense level.
Is it on the increase,
level.
Do you think?
Well, they're being played at a more incredible, intense level. And challenges do occur. You can't, as I said, I can't prevent, you can't prevent a challenge. You can't prevent an injury. All you have to do is when someone is injured, that you jump in and you just put your arms around and say you protect them. And that's all you can do. And if we get that message out, Tom, if there's only one message to put out about this, is that it's just to protect and serve them. And you're protecting them from themselves primarily, because they will want to go back out morning, noon and night.
And not being alarmist, as you said at the outset, but just again, you know, to remind us, you know, what are the symptoms and what are the signs and what are, you know, what to do.
Okay, first of all, from the very start, I don't want anyone wrapped up in cotton wool this weekend, all right? And that goes to the Donegal boys too. That goes to the Donegal lads too. And I want no mums or dads taking their kids out of any team sport on the basis of what may happen, okay? If we have enough people on the sideline, and that includes parents, you know, who are all on the same page, all in the same agreement to say, look, if someone we think is concussed or has got a banged head, they're coming off, then there's never any question about it, okay? So if a player gets a bad, you know, obviously if a player gets banged the head, but, you know, a frontal challenge or
come back to the Ryan Bradley situation.
Yeah, a bang to the torso or a bang to the upper chest, where you can get a transmitted force up and start complaining.
Kind of whiplash type.
Yeah. Well, they get it and start complaining of a headache. The majority of them will have, the majority, about 8 or 9 out of 10 of them will have a headache. There'll be blurred vision. There'll be some degree of not knowing where they are, what they call amnesia. There'll be colour distortion. And sometimes you get what I call emotional ability, where they become quite upset, or even the opposite, quite euphoric, but you know, they get tearful for no reason, quite emotionally labile. In conjunction with the aforementioned nature of the injury, then that's a concussion, and you take that player off, right? And you sit on them and you observe them, and you put in place with your therapist, whoever, you know, physio or physical therapist, whatever, for the club, a program of when this player is going to come back, and there's someone there to reassess him, and he's not put back into an A versus B year, not put back into the sprints or to the heavy running and all that. He's put back in a gradual process, and, you know, 7 to 10 days they're all back.
And it's fair to say, probably
ignorance of the injury is probably more dangerous than the actual injury itself.
Well, you know, the old adage, and Tom, you were making reference to it, like, we've all been at games where a fella's got, got the wind, so-called winded, or got, and, you know, he's told to go into full forward for 10 minutes just to get the wind back in him, you know, and, you know, a lot of time you'd wonder why there hasn't been more badly injured, you know. I said, I think I've admitted seven, Kevin Moore, and have admitted, I think, six in 6 months, you know, with... And these were multi, you know, but they were high intensity. Like Mark McHugh, just to give an example, in the Ulster final, had, you know, he had a perforated eardrum, he had a really bad concussion, and he had a full thickness muscle tear from a collision, a so-called 50-50. So that's the same impact as a car. That's what you expect someone coming out of a car crash to have. Okay, so. You'd wonder about, you know, why there aren't more of them. If I'm if I'm taking all these people, maybe I'm just unfortunate, and we're getting people. Yeah. You don't know if are people targeting where they coming after Donegal players, because no other county was admitting that number and having that number.
Are there statistics? No, there are figures. Or
it's very hard to. If you look at the criteria or the research done on this, Tom, the rates for concussion range between different groups from 29, which is about 1 in 3. That's 1 in 3. To 90%, so you can't correlate, and you can't correlate sports, but we do know that the game has got strong. It's got very fast.
Yeah, men have got fitter and physically.
Very fit, very fast, but it's got very fast, and they play at a high level of intensity. Like, and you only have to go back and look at the Laker Gael or the old TG Gold, I think it's called. It's like looking at a different game back in the '80s. Yeah. You know,
it's like looking at an old cowboy and.
No, it is, like, it's a different game, you know. And now the game is really played, and it's a high tempo game from start to finish. And you said the guys are super fast, they're super strong, they're super fit, and they're super dedicated. And that all owes to the fact that they're super determined not to come off, you know. So that's why you have to be nearly more determined to. And players, the one thing I do understand that I've come to really, really admire about the Donegal boys, the lads anyway, is that they appreciate input into making sure they're looked after, and that their well-being is put is being looked after, and they're not asking them to put their well-being in jeopardy. And with that, over a period of time comes a certain level of trust that they have in you. Now, as I could say to Martin O'Reilly that day, and I was bringing him up to the hospital, I could reassure him that nothing bad is going to happen to him, and that he'd be well out there, and this would not have any long-term sequelae for him. Okay, and that comes, and if you looked after it, and if all these head injuries are looked after in that capacity, that's what happens, Tom. You know, but I think after last year, and again in the first round of the McKenna Cup, you know, it was kind of daunting. It was quite frightening to be on the sideline and have to have another man. And then, you know, like, you have to realise there's a human factor side of this. So I had to ring Martin's dad, Terry. I try and get in touch with his mother, Lena, you know. His brother was there. So his sister, I think, was working in Dublin. She couldn't come home. So all of a sudden they see their son being carried off and he's got blood coming down. And you have to reassure them, you know. And that's what... So all I'm trying to do here is I'm trying to reassure that if we look after these in time, then that... in itself will be more than sufficient. What you don't want to do is put any player at jeopardy by putting them back out onto the field. If there's any concern by anyone that a player is concussed, you take that player off. And if that message gets out, if there's only two messages I have to go out tonight, Tom, number one, your brain is made of nothing stronger than jelly, right? And that is the best supercomputer you could possibly, nothing has come close to competing with it. And we have our own natural ability to protect it with our skull. Anything that puts that in jeopardy, we have to try and minimise, right? And the other thing is that to protect that super computer that's made of jelly, we have to protect and serve the player, right? So we can't prevent them getting an injury. We can't prevent Mark McHugh going in against someone's knee. I can't prevent Ryan Bradley falling when he goes to field the ball. I can't prevent someone hitting Frank McGlynn on top of the head, but I can jump in at that stage, and I have to protect him, and I have to serve him by taking him off the field, putting my arms around him, taking him off, wrapping him in cotton wool for a week, and then integrating him at a gradual process. And if you do that, in a structured pattern, then this never really becomes an issue. What doesn't happen, if you don't do that in time, you have a Benjamin Robin situation where if a young fella goes out, because the dad saw the video, a couple of hard hits, became reckless, multiple concussions in a very short period of time, and died. And that's what, I don't want that to happen. And that's why I took it to the county convention, they let me speak for 20 minutes to the various clubs. I'm just trying to get that message out. We have to protect them, we have to serve them. And what we're trying to, the organ we're trying to protect here is made of nothing stronger than jelly. And if you damage that, and damage irretrievably, it can kill you. And that's all I'm trying to do.